We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Macclesfield College Guide, read by Brian Perkins.
Astronomy for Beginners, an introduction to our universe, now includes a field trip.
Thanks to Karen Johnson of Macclesfield for that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Jeremy Hardy. Opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Francis Ween. Andy, who's adamant that Saddam's a badden?
This is Iraq, the sequel. Tony Blair, our Prime Minister and fashion icon, is standing shoulder to bottom behind the Americans, and basically we're being prepared for another phase of war against Saddam Hussein. And I was reading this, and the thing that struck me is, why can't we go back to the good old days in medieval times where the leaders fought in single combat and decided the whole thing? Because I think Tony Blair versus Saddam Hussein, I think Tony would be in with a reasonable shout. It would save a lot of lives and a lot of money, and it just seems like the easy way out, the obvious way out. Isn't it nice that I get such a soft, easy comedy question?
We've been hearing for weeks that they've been finalising the conditions under which the government might just agree to support America. And the conditions seem to be, as long as Bush does exactly what he likes and allows Blair to trail behind him like a moonstruck nitwit.
America continues to fight in Afghanistan and wants to start new wars against Iraq, Iran and North Korea. Not bad for a president who still thinks Al-Qaeda is the guy who got more votes than him in the last election. Jeremy, why are the Tories pleased to have a defective politician?
Talk about a rat joining a sinking ship. This MEP... MEP Richard Balfe has decided that he hates the government, which is understandable, we all hate the government, but his decision is that he will therefore join the Tories, which is like swapping crabs for syphilis, isn't it? Just because you don't like New Labour, there's other ways of going. You don't have to join the Tories. But they're all cock-a-hoop. And he said one of the reasons he didn't like Labour was that they'd gotten away from their traditional roots. And so he's... Oh, I don't know. So he's joined the Tories. I hope he's very happy there. But apparently he got into trouble with Labour because he was a quester. Quester's an amateur theatrical company in Ealing, by the way.
A small, cheesy snack, isn't it? A quester.
No, that's Monster Munch.
All right.
Yeah, no, he's left to join the Tories. He's told his parents, that's it, Mum, Dad, I'm off to join the Tory party. They said, no good will come of it, lad.
Can I just say, actually, how relieved I am tonight to get here and find that Jeremy is my partner tonight, because I heard this awful rumour this afternoon that it was going to be Russell Crowe. Which, actually, I was quite daunted by, because apparently he turned very nasty on Just a Minute. I don't know if you heard that. Got Nicholas Parsons up against the wall and said, don't you tell me I've just got a minute. Told Nicholas Parsons he'll never work in LA now. We've never heard that the guy he threatened, we never heard his answer. It would be really cool if, you know, when Russell Crowe said to him, and I'm going to see to it personally that you never work in LA, if the other guy had said, well, I'm going to see to it personally that you never work in Ipswich. That would be cool, wouldn't it?
Russell Crowe's your lookalike, isn't he?
Mine. Yeah, I've had the ween problem you've got with Ian Duncan Smith. I've had that over the years with... well, first it was Demis Roussos. Then, for people with small televisions, it was Luciano Pavarotti. And now I'm often mistaken for Russell Crowe. If I throw a real tantrum as well, I can... It was embarrassing when Nicole Kidman got confused. That was really...
Richard Balfe, the former Labour MEP, has defected to the Tory party, citing New Labour's control freakery. 2 points there. Francis, why has the government's cry of up the workers been changed to stick it up the workers?
Extraordinary story. It turns out that Stephen Byers has told a fib. And he said to the party conference last year, I think it was Byers, wasn't it? Usually is. that they were going to stop this business whereby when public services are half privatised, the private workers have different contracts of employment and different wage rates and all the rest of it. Two-tier employment, it's called. And a document from Downing Street, cabinet document, has been leaked to the Times saying, let's keep this two-tier employment. It's awfully good, really. It keeps the workers on their toes. They never know whether they're coming or going and whether they're going to be sacked. Rather like Stephen Byers, actually. Basically, they've told a pack of lies. It's hardly news that they're liars, is it? Really? We had this last week and the week before. We've had this for the last umpteen years. But that's the gist of it, I believe, that they're going to screw the workers. It's all softening people up for the great crusade against Iraq, I think. He's going to act tough. Hang tough. Is that what they call it?
The leaked report suggests the government wants to backtrack on their pledge to protect public sector workers' rights. Ironically, these rights were originally introduced by Lady Thatcher. Number 10 have accused her of being just an embittered old lefty. Alan, whose steely resolve threatens to crush British jobs under the wheels of American industry.
This is the ongoing Lakshmi Mittal story, isn't it? Having persuaded George Bush that British steel is no good, compared with steel made in offshore islands of Dalmatia, on which he happens to have the franchise, Bush has now said, well, that's fine then, and we won't import any steel from anywhere, and there'll be a tariff on British steel, and a thing called Chorus, which is a tiny dependency of Consignia, these two fearful little republics. Chorus has about four people working in the steel industry, and now they're all going to be unemployed, and the last sardine can in South Wales will not be built. So we won't be able to build any bombs to help Bush bomb people. So it's quite a good thing.
Surely the main charge against Tony Blair is one of an absence of patriotism, isn't it? Because, I mean, an awful lot of people are saying, why on earth is he doing favours for all these dodgy foreign businessmen when Britain has some of the finest dodgy businessmen in the world?
And there is Blair with these American cuffs that Paul Smith irons on from American transfers, and Blair has them. He's done everything possible to commend himself, and he's now been screwed.
We will be returning to this topic later.
Will we? Can I have 2 points now, and then I can go home and have a sandwich?
The shirts thing is part of his...
He doesn't want you to do the shirts thing.
More hip. Oh, you don't...
No, you can do it later. We can put it in now. Later, that's all right.
Oh, that'll be in the shirt round, then.
Yes.
I bet I don't get the easy shirt question. I bet I get the chemical warfare question.
The president's move poses a severe threat to the whole workforce of the British steel industry, or Dave and Jeff, as they're known. European Union Chief Romano Prodi has announced steps will have to be taken in retaliation. Let's hope he also grabs S Club 7 and hearsay. We start round two with a cutting from the Heatherside Community Newsletter.
Senior Citizens Club, good news. We were pleased to welcome a new member last week, and I hope by the time my few words are printed, this lady will still be with us.
Thanks to John Welsh of Camberley for that. Jeremy, why is an Englishman's home his box?
Prefabs. They're going to make flat-pack self-assembly houses because of the housing shortage in London is that bad. And hitherto, homeless people could only walk round IKEA, which is kind of virtual reality housing, where the homeless moon around distractedly and mournfully imagining they had things. And look at work surfaces. But now they're going to get... You'll go to World of Houses on the Purley Way. Land of Semis. And you pick up... No, they're actually prefabs. But my mum had a prefab after the war. She said they're great. But they're going to have to build these because the houses are so much in London, which is mostly because of estate agents jacking the prices up and making areas posh, like the area between Brixton and Wandsworth used to be called Clapham, and now it's called Between the Prisons. I mean, the house is only bricks, isn't it? What, it's bricks,
cardboard,
bit of plumbing, bit of grouting, dado rail, bit of making good. That's about it, bit of skirting. You can get the mouldings cheap. It shouldn't take about 20 quid to knock a house together. So, but because they're so dramatically overpriced... Because the thing... I mean, Alan could sell up and buy Burnley. He probably has for spares. They're going to build prefabs for nurses and doctors and people.
Does that mean there's going to be loads of people standing around unassembled houses saying, there's a bit missing, I know that.
Yeah, The homeless.
Ring them up. Ring up that helpline and find out.
The homeless will shuffle you up, she's saying. Got any spare Allen keys, Governor? 10 points.
Portable flat pack homes are being offered as a possible solution to the housing crisis facing key workers in London. Homes will be assembled in areas of London which at the moment see little human activity. 10 Downing Street, Whitehall, Buckingham Palace. Francis, listen to this. Give it up. Francis, who are giving up and giving in for the sake of the firm?
It's Prince Edward and his lovely wife, the Countess Sophie, the Wessex girl. And they've made themselves redundant. Slightly unnecessary move, since most of us knew they were redundant all along. But the Queen is going to give them a £1 million payoff, well, to stop doing other work, non-royal work. He's going to give up this completely unsuccessful TV company he runs. She's going to give up her rather disastrous PR career, and they're going to be royal people and do openings. But unfortunately, just after their announcement, Buckingham Palace published the list of forthcoming engagements, and it turns out that Edward and Sophie have, I think, 21 engagements between now and the end of July in their exciting new career. So obviously breaking themselves in a bit slowly. I mean, and then when you look at them, it's not just, you know, they're not opening the Commonwealth Games or anything. It's Visit Chelsea Flower Show. And I've got 21 engagements in the next week, if you count things like that. You know, visit, takeaway, collect tandoori. Visit dry cleaners, visit cinema, visit school to deposit children. 21, between now and the end of July, those stalwart people are going to do 21 public engagements. I think they're going to visit the Windsor Horse Show as well. And take the salute, whatever that is, at the Windsor Horse Show. And they're going to be richer than ever.
You've got to bear in mind who you're thinking about there, Francis. I mean, the first one is probably something like Master the Spoon or something. Walk and talk at the same time. Tiny steps, one thing at a time. But if the Queen can buy out his TV career, could she pay off Jim Davidson for us?
What you really want to see is what's going to happen to their organisations, who always said there's nothing to do with the royals, we are companies in good standing. They won't go on without them, will they? What's going to happen to Ardent without him? Go back to being a deaf aide.
Well, it might make the odd programme
which wasn't about the royal family. But also, I think it was only about 2 months ago, there was a huge piece saying that Prince Edward had just been commissioned to do a huge series called The A to Z of Royalty.
Yeah, that's right. So won't get as far as Zog, we worked out, didn't we?
But is he going to finish that, or is he just going to give up?
You're asking me
when he gets... You're a friend of my diary again. You're a friend of Geoffrey Archer, you're a friend of Prince Philip, you're a friend of all these people, you know what's what.
Lord St. John of Falsley urged the Earl and Countess to be guided by common sense. So that's them screwed. Andy, what was what palming off as a lot?
Aha.
We know.
All right.
James Watt. Didn't invent steam. It was actually invented by Spinning Jenny at the Battle of Cardigan.
2 points.
He was a fraud.
James Watt was a fraud.
He counterfeited flutes.
He'll tell you. He made fake flutes.
He sold fake flutes that weren't real ones, and there was a famous flute person who was the flute equivalent of Stradivarius. And he used
Thomas
to forge...
Lott.
Thomas Lott. One point to Alan.
Mm. He did it to support his research into steam. I mean, he made these flutes and went out and bought a kettle. And so, I mean, without his fake flutes, there'd be no rail track. There'd be no Connex South East. Now, we owe a great deal to
did
him.
Did he just
this.
Name steam before they just called it that
they didn't
funny
know what
misty
it was.
Stuff in
they had
the
no
kitchen.
Idea what it was. They thought it was fart.
They must have known what it was. It had fire since ages.
They'd been boiling this kettle for about 15 years. They had no idea. They didn't know what a kettle was for.
No.
Until he put wheels on it, it became the 1412 to Darlington. That's what it is, they said. It's a train.
That's what he was thinking.
Perhaps he was inventing the train whistle. Perhaps he was thinking, if I get this kettle and this flute together, we could probably go up Shap Fell.
That's why he didn't do violins. That would have sounded ridiculous. Imagine your kettle boils and you get the strain of Vivaldi coming from the kitchen.
Is it a crime to try to play a fake flute, a counterfeit flute? Is that like trying
that
to pass a fiver?
Is that a rhetorical question?
Yeah.
Like, is it a crime? No. Then call me guilty. Is it?
A flute bearing the fake stamp which had the name of the celebrated flute maker Thomas Lott, has been discovered among the Scottish inventor James Watt's personal effects at the Science Museum. 2 points to Jeremy and 1 point to Alan, because it means so much.
I think you find it's 2 points to Andy with Jeremy's help.
Yes.
And 1 point to Alan.
No, I don't want it.
Not that...
You don't want a point.
No. Oh, have one.
Have the point.
No, right.
You know you'd want it.
You wish you had later.
Yeah.
Just take one with you in case you get competitive later on.
Alan, why are conservationists clocking fewer cuckoos?
There are very few cuckoos in England. Since they don't build their own nests, they're probably having to pay a fortune for other birds' nests, and they can't afford to move in. They're going to Burnley. Yes, if you throw your window open any morning, you won't hear the cuckoo. It should be doing that thing now of cuckoo, and then it changes its tune in June and all the rest of it, but it isn't. And a lot of other birds aren't as well. I mean, the starling is disappearing, and the sparrow. And what's coming into these parakeets? See, this is an invasion of parrots, and mm-hmm. all over England, the most likely thing you'll find crapping on your bird table is a parrot. I don't know why they're coming. They're all coming. They're probably going to get jobs as political advisors. I don't know why. But England is filling up with these birds that talk to one another, possibly on mobile phones. And the cuckoo has disappeared.
Cuckoos are dying out because the birds they opportunistically lay their eggs in their nests, those birds are dying out. So the cuckoo's brought it on itself, hasn't it? I mean, it's rendering those little birds extinct from the outset.
Andy, nobody is defending cuckoos. Trying to have a sensible discussion about this.
And while we're at it, when are we going to do something about the magpies? This is ridiculous. The magpies... I don't want to wish to sound paranoid, people, but
stop
the magpies...
Stop and search, that's
they're
what they
taking
mean.
Over. Stop and search is the only answer.
I've lost all my shiny things.
We had a magpie... We had a magpie plague, and I rang up the RSPB, Royal Society of Protection of Birds. Well, they don't, because they didn't want to protect it. I wanted to kill them. But I rang them in. They're in a place called Sandy Beds, which I've always loved. It's Sandy in Bedfordshire. I rang them up. I said, we've got all these magpies. And they said, it's tough. And I said, can I kill them? I asked that very question. And they said, no, you can't. But we can send you a paper model of a kite. I didn't know what this was. I really only knew up to that point starlings and pigeons, and I could only tell those apart when they were lying dead next to one another. Because I knew one was larger than the other, but I can't remember which. Anyway, so the people in Sandy, I said, what's a kite? And they said, well, a kite is the only bird that a magpie is afraid of. It's a big red thing, and it's like a hawk. And they sent me this cardboard one. Or rather, it was a design for a cardboard one in an envelope. And the only cardboard I had in the house was from a Dimplex radiator that we'd had delivered. So I cut this kite out. So it just had Implex on the side of it. So it had to be really, you know, really dim magpies. But anyway, and I put it on a broom. Now, I put it in the middle of the lawn. And I woke up the next morning, it was about 6 o'clock. It was this terrible noise. And these magpies were pecking it to bits. True story. True story. Anyway, it was only a jay in a dinner jacket. I wouldn't worry about it.
Before we start the final round, here's an item from the recruitment pages of the Walton Informer.
Part-time school children required for large boarding kennel in Ottershaw.
Thanks to Kenneth Sharp of Esher for sending that one in. Andy, listen to this.
I'm too sexy for my shirt. Too sexy for my shirt. So sexy it hurts. And I am too sexy for Milan. Too sexy for Milan. New York and Japan.
2 points to Andy. We
Now, I want to talk about this. I have the 2 points now.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. God, I'm very competitive tonight. I don't know what it is. It must be a testosterone thing. This is Tony Blair, who has been wearing these apparently very smart... I always get the fashion questions, everybody. You probably noticed that. That's because I'm the only knowledgeable person on fashion on this show. He's wearing these Paul Smith shirts, which have naked ladies on the cuffs. But, I mean, as far as I can ascertain, he didn't have his cuffs out. So, really, all he had was hidden naked ladies, which I think is rather suburban. And that's where people said, oh, I've got some rather racy sleeves that you can't... no one can see, obviously, because they're a bit rude. But this is all part of trying to make him a bit more hip and with it. And he's got... Apparently, he's got this Caesar haircut. I hope he's not superstitious, because this is March. yeah, he's a groovy... sort of Austin Powers kind of figure now. I thought it all looked rather nice, but then I shop at Millett's and I don't really know anything.
Trying to put this delicately, he's got naked ladies specifically on his cuffs. So he's only got to look at his wrist.
Don't go there.
It's all just fallen into place, isn't it?
Bill Clinton would have loved them, wouldn't he? Hey, Tony, show me your sleeves again.
It should be one of those ones that as you move it, the blouse comes on and off.
One of those ones. You mean one of those ones? Are you saying that product is available on the market?
No, those pictures that, you know, if you turn it one way, then it's a rude thing and then it's covered up.
There was a spread in one of the papers showing all the different outfits that Blair has modelled in his years
as
Prime Minister, ranging from the Paul Smith pinstripe suit to the jeans to the T-shirt he wore for the barbecue, the Donna Karan number that only cost about 100 quid for a T-shirt. And he looks like a model from the Bowdoin catalogue in every one of these things, saying, well, on Friday, dress down Friday, I like to chill out with the Commonwealth heads of government. And the unifying feature of all these things, whether they were his suits or his wife, that he looked a complete Birkin in all of them. Because he was trying too hard. You just didn't have this in the days when Mr. Attlee was Prime Minister, this problem of Prime Ministers feeling they have to muck about with their clothes.
Tony Blair was spotted at the Commonwealth Conference wearing a shirt which had pictures of naked women on each cuff.
Can I just say how disorientating it was to have Ian Duncan Smith doing an impression of Tony Blair?
I think it's time for you to tell the world what you just told me about Duncan Smith. Do you feel ready for it? It's like the giant rat of Sumatra, a story for which the world is not yet prepared.
Well, apparently...
This is exactly
like the giant rat of Sumatra,
it is,
apparently.
Yes.
A former girlfriend of his claims that there is a giant rat nestling in Duncan Smith's pants.
He'd have noticed, wouldn't he?
Is that a euphemism? That's not a real rat, is it?
No, but he's enormous, she said.
So how identical are you to this man?
This is why I'm trying to spread this story around a bit in the hope that people will assume.
It's terrible. There's going to be this road accident and they'll arrive and the pathologist will say, no, I think this one's Francis Wheeler.
A baby gerbil rather than a giant rat, I think.
Francis, who won't be giving a dusty question the brush off?
The brush off? National Trust, National Front, or one of them. National Trust.
It's about possibly the National Front or the National Trust. we're just narrowing it down.
Well, insofar as how the homes are owned, the two aren't exactly dissimilar. The stately homes administered by the National Trust, the books get covered in dust. That's because for generations, the owners of these books were unable to read and couldn't open them. But they have wonderful bindings and left them on shelves where the dust collected. And it's now been discovered by a team, presumably, from some university or other, that brushing the dust off these books damages them more than leaving the dust on. So a decision is because people sat round a boardroom and decided that they would now not brush the dust off the books. And that decision had been taken last week, and now National Trust homes will have dusty books.
Well, they probably hired John Burt as a consultant on £200,000 a year to advise them on it.
I think that's it, isn't it, Simon?
It is. The National Trust has instructed cleaners not to dust its shelves for 3 years as part of an experiment to find the best way of protecting its valuable collection of antiquarian books. Most dust consists entirely of old human skin, a bit like the bin outside Kylie's plastic surgeon.
Oh.
Alan, your real question, who will be the saviour of the world, Superman or an aristocratic Goons fan from Gloucestershire?
If you show me mine, I'll show you yours.
Well, it's the amazing news that Prince Charles is a national hero.
Oh, that, yes.
They're naming a street after him and building a life-size statue of this extraordinary Charles Atlas body attached to Prince Charles's head, minus the bald patch, and a pair of wings.
Six-pack and wings, I suppose.
And it's going to have an inscription underneath it saying, Saviour of the World.
Yeah.
It must be rather galling for old Blair. There he is, gads all over the globe, saying, yeah, I'm saving the planet. No one thanks him for it. And then Prince Charles goes to Copacabana Beach and dances a couple of sambas and wins a Nobel Prize.
He's winged, isn't it?
Yes, it has wings. It has the most astonishing sort of washboard stomach and Charles Atlas spectral.
Little towel round his Ian Duncan Smith, as I remember.
It's a nappy, I think, actually.
The nappy.
It's either a loincloth or a nappy.
But if you walk round the back, there's a sort of slight hint of butter. It's really rather exciting. It's because he saved the rainforest. I don't know how, but it's been put up in the rainforest.
I thought it was Sting who saved the rainforest.
No, it's Charles. The rainforest have had a whip round for him anyway. The orangutans have chucked in a few bob and given him a statue.
While on tour in Brazil, Prince Charles was presented with a replica of a statue depicting him as saviour of the world. The statue gives Charles a He-Man body, naked, apart from something which looks like a loincloth, but is in fact the prince's truss. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cutting teams have brought along. Andy.
Many thanks to Diana Sykes of Stratford-upon-Avon. This was spotted in her local parish magazine. And it says, Churchwood maintenance is becoming increasingly difficult, and it would be appreciated if parishioners would cut the grass round their own graves.
Jeremy.
This was sent in by David Haverty of Newbury in Berkshire, and it's from EasyJet's website. It says, this section is refunds, flight transfers and name changes. EasyJet does not issue refunds. However, requests for refunds will be considered in exceptional circumstances and on medical grounds when a fee of £10 per passenger per leg will be charged.
Francis.
I'm very grateful to Lewis Stoven for sending me this one from the Wolverhampton Express and Star, of all unlikely papers, since it's about an event in Bangladesh. A gang of naked armed robbers raided a village in southern Bangladesh. Shocked villagers are reported to have run away when they saw the men leaving their homes to be robbed. Shopkeeper Abdul Rahman said the chances of catching them were slim because they had applied oil to their bodies. Police Chief Nabayati Kisi said, nude terrorism will be dealt with a firm hand.
Alan.
Mine's from the Keynsham Weekly Advertiser, Simon, and it says, as if there were not confirmation enough of falling A-level standards, over 90% of sixth formers in a recent poll thought Adolf Hitler was a German. Only 7% correctly identified him as an Australian.
Thank you all. Final scores are Alan and Jeremy 16, but Alan and Francis 17 points. And before we leave you, here's an apology from the BBC Music magazine sent in to us by Ian Stewart of Peterborough.
We apologise to Martin Cotton, author of January's BBC Music File. A reference to Peter Peer's bowels should have been his vowels.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Andy Hamilton, Jeremy Hardy and Francis Wheen. The chairman was Simon Hoggard and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Dave Curran, Simon Littlefield, Paul McKenzie and George Poles, and the producer was Lucy Armitage.